Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Deep Dish Radio, episode 18, voice actor Kathy Garver.
Hey, welcome back to Deep Dish Radio. I'm Tim Powers, and this is my show. How you doing? I am really glad that you have come back. I'd like to say thank you and welcome to all my new listeners in the United Kingdom. Thank you very much to the motherland. Those of you who joined me as a result of listening to Ian Lee. Fantastic interview, and Ian is just charming as hell. What can I say? Greetings from across the pond, and we're glad to have you. We hope you stick around, and I love hearing from you on Twitter. We'll get to how you can join the show in just a little while. Wow, fantastic. You know, not that long ago, one of my guests was talented actor Johnny Whitaker. Johnny was a child star on he was in the Tom Sawyer movie. He was in a movie called The Biscuit Eaters, which just played here in Los Angeles today, as a matter of fact. And was on a Saturday morning show called Sigmund and the Sea Monsters in 75. And he just a swell guy. Well, if you remember Family Affair, you remember Jody, and you remember Johnny Whitaker. Well, I am pleased to say that today's guest played Johnny's sister. Yep, it's Kathy Garver, who played Sissy on Family Affair, and whew, she was one of those 60s heartthrobs, man. She was a pretty young girl, and she was about 20 years old when she got the role in 1966. She was a UCLA undergrad, and she was on Family Affair from 66 to 71, and lives on today in secondary runs, reruns all over the world. It's an incredibly popular show, and Kathy and I talk a little bit about that. But, dude, more importantly, in the 80s, on Saturday morning, she was Firestar on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. She's got an amazing career in voiceover, and she talks a little bit about that, which is fantastic. She actually, for I don't know why, but she complimented my voice, so I love her. She's awesome. She's also got a couple of new books coming out. One is called Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now? Which kind of gives the lowdown on, of course, former child stars. So your Johnny Whitakers and your Kathy Garvers and your Sparky Marcuses and your various and sundry Mouseketeers, things like that. And it's a fascinating read, and, you know, the child star trope is out there for a reason. There's a lot of stories behind the rise and fall, and sometimes the rise and polite walk away from fame that some of these kids did. And those stories are interesting to a lot of folks. So we encourage you to pick up Kathy's book. It's available at Amazon or wherever books are sold. And then her memoirs are published in a book called Surviving Sissy. That's C-I-S-S-Y. Surviving Sissy is available at Amazon.com, and you'll want to check that out because it's a fun read, and there's a lot of great stuff in there, a lot of great showbiz stories. And if you're interested especially in what happened on the set at Family Affair and how those actors survived some pretty harsh times after the show went off the air. Well, it's interesting, and it's all in that book, Surviving Sissy. So Kathy Garver joins me in just a little while. So if you like what you hear, I'd love to see some feedback on iTunes. Go ahead and leave a comment right there. I would love to read comments on the air. If I ever got any, I'd be delighted to read them. The Twitter feed has blown up with those of you in England, who are actually all over the United Kingdom, to be fair, who joined me because of my guest Ian Lee, and I am very happy to have you join us. That's fantastic. Never been over to the UK. So it makes me feel a little more welcome knowing there are so many people out there who are listening to me. Thanks. What can I say? If you ever want to come into LA for a cup of tea, let me know. I'll set you up. And but if you want to follow us on Twitter, at Deep Dish Radio is where you can follow me on Twitter, and I take your emails anytime at call me Tim, email me at tim@deepdishradio.com, tim@deepdishradio.com. I also have a new hotline. I have a new phone number, and it takes messages, and I would love to hear from y'all. So if you would consider giving me a call, that would be fantastic. Let me see if I can find where the hell this number is. Nope. Oh, here it is. Yep, call me on the number. It's so new, I don't have it memorized. In the United States, it's 401-426-DEEP. That's 401-426-DEEP, 3337. Yeah, you just dial that number, and it's a voicemail number. So you record a little message for me if you have a comment on the show. If you want to tell me to shut up and get back to Kathy Garver, I can do that. Or you can tell me you like what I'm doing, or suggest a guest. Or you want to be a guest? Fine. Call me. I'd love to hear your story, too. That's what this is all about. It's basically just interesting people that I encounter in the course of my life, and they become my guests. So I'd love to have you on the show. So there you go. There's the phone number. There's the email address. There's a Twitter page. I think there's a Facebook page out there somewhere that my lovely wife set up. So if you want to check that out, I'd love it. And there's great things happening all the time. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much for being a part of Deep Dish Radio. I'm really, really grateful. So here we go. Kathy Garver coming up right after this.
It's Deep Dish Podcast. Subscribe today and tell a friend about Deep Dish Podcast with Tim Powers. With Tim Powers.
So the new book, Surviving Sissy, is coming out very, very soon. And is this all new stories, or is this a revision of a previous book?
Actually, Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood, launched September 1st.
Okay.
And it was a very popular book, and it sold out. So we are now going into our second printing of the same book. I have a new book coming out April 15th. Which is Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now?
Fantastic. Then
yes.
let's start with Surviving Sissy, and then we'll get into the new book, which sounds really exciting. The stories in Surviving Sissy are really interesting. You are my first guest to ever work with DeMille, which is fantastic. Can you talk about how you got involved with that?
Well, I was just originally hired as an extra. It was one of my first jobs as a small child in Hollywood.
Right.
And he noticed me on this wagon and came down, and from his perch way up on a crane, I actually thought he was God. I was a kid, who knew?
Right.
And we talked, and he had special scenes written into the movie with Charlton Heston for me. And I was on that movie for about 4 months.
And this is the Ten Commandments.
Right? Yes, and actually I just talked with someone, and we're going to be doing a big celebration of the movie. This is the 60th anniversary of the Ten Commandments.
Right.
And I hate to say that it's the 50th anniversary of Family Affair, odd to me since I'm 39, but there you have it.
You and Jack Benny, it's amazing how that works.
Yes, and I like it, though.
And to most of America, while Sissy was 15, you know, you're always going to be 21 to most of us, you know.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I can go along with that.
Kind of figured.
And my son just had his quarter century birthday. He is now 25. He had that on February 20th, and he was just going through a quarter life crisis. oh, I don't know. I'm so old, Mom. I don't know what lies ahead. I said, it'll be okay, honey. Just go with it.
Well, where were you at 25, Kathy?
I was just finishing up doing Family Affair.
Right.
And I was in London, England, about that time, going to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. I had graduated from UCLA with a degree in speech and psychology, and then I decided, oh, I haven't suffered enough for my art. So I went to Royal Academy, and that's where I was, about his age,
wow,
in London, England, by myself. He's in the basement with his girlfriend. Times have changed.
I suppose there are worse places to be than in your basement with your girlfriend, but at 25, okay.
Yeah.
When mom was footloose and fancy free in London, how was Family Affair received in the UK? Were you recognized?
Not really. There was really a delay in, especially at that time, of American shows getting over to other countries.
Right.
We became very well known in Germany and Israel, and especially in 1972, I remember going over to Israel and doing a live musical stage adaptation of Family Affair, learning Hebrew for my part and singing. Ani habat harishona was very spirited.
Wow! So did you learn Hebrew, and I mean this with all due respect, did you learn Hebrew or did you learn your lines phonetically?
Phonetically.
Okay.
I was a speech major, that helped.
Yeah.
But yes, I had no idea what I was saying.
That's fantastic. It would be really interesting to see Mr. French as speaking in Hebrew.
Well, they say that there, you know, we all have doppelgangers or people that look exactly like us.
Right.
And I must say, when I went there, Mr. French looked like Sebastian Cabot. And,
wow.
And the Uncle Bill looked like Brian Keith and the two cute little kids. I played myself, so I really looked like myself. But
now that's casting, Kathy.
Very close, yes.
Wow, that's really great. That's really great. Because, I mean, you know, the 50th anniversary of Family Affair is an interesting thing because there are so many great timeless shows that are experiencing their 50th anniversary either this year, next year, or the year before. Yours, Batman, Star Trek, The Monkees, Dark Shadows, just five right off the top of my head that are iconic that everybody recognizes. And you've probably been asked this a zillion times, but what is it about Family Affair that has kept it alive for 50 years?
Well, I think that when the show was originally produced, the very intelligent Don Federson, who was a creator producer, looked at the longevity of the show and thought that it might be a classic. He had had a lot of experience with My Three Sons,
right,
which I lasted a long time, and the way that it was filmed. So, you know, here this was in the 60s, and I was all set to wear mini skirts and plastic boots. And Mr. Federson said, well, no. And so the look remained classic.
Uh-huh.
And the look of the clothes, the look of the settings. You watch that show today. It's on MeTV, and, of course, it's on DVDs, etc.
Right.
But it's like walking into something that is in the 2000s because of the interior decor, the clothing. The stories are incredibly timeless. The structure is very classic. You start out with a problem, you work towards the problem. There's the climax and the sliding off or the denouement. It's all about love,
right,
which is timeless. So I think all those things added to its classicism, as well as it was filmed instead of on tape. And that soft edge made it so beautiful that it became, you know, like a part of everyone's dream. And it's still there today.
Wow. And, I mean, it's just as colorful as ever. And I suppose you're right. The soft edge of the film really lends a beauty to it that some of the shows that were shot on early video, you know, they seem kind of sharp. They seem kind of harsh. The colors are kind of loud. And it's interesting because, you know, in 65 and 66, the concept of residuals wasn't as prevalent as it is now. That's kind of prescient of Fetterman to really think about that. And I would imagine it helps more for the producers than the actors.
Well, for sure. And for the color, 1966 was the first year that ABC, CBS, NBC were showing full seasons of shows in color.
Right.
And ours was one of the very first. And that's why we have the big kaleidoscope at the beginning of all the shows, just to remind people, if they hadn't noticed, that the show is in color. So the color was wonderful. But, you know, even early video, I think today's video is in HD. I absolutely abhor. From an actor's standpoint, it is so crisp and clear that it shows every single blemish. But you know something? That isn't even real in life. Maybe it's because I don't have my glasses on. But people don't see that clearly on looking at a landscape or looking at a person that's even at the next table. So that, I think, skews even the vision of something or the experience of something into more clarity or reality than perhaps we were meant to go.
That's an interesting.
I just made that up. That sounded pretty good.
That sounds great. And actually, it got me thinking that, you know, a lot of the timeless films, which are beautifully shot, you know, your Ten Commandments, for example, or, you know, I'm in Southern California, and on Valentine's Day, my lovely bride took me to see King Kong, the original King Kong, right, from 1933. Not a high def movie, right? But timeless, and has been enjoyed for generations, you know. And some of the fun is the low resolution, or sometimes, you know, the lack of that granularity, that clarity, you know, because you're paying attention to the story.
And especially for something like a King Kong, which is kind of in the fantasy realm.
Right.
It's nice to have it kind of shaded with that sort of said, as you are in a dream. Sometimes Family Affair is criticized and sometimes lauded for being, well, this wasn't reality. You know, those people, you know, these kids were so nice to each other and there was so much love that abounded. Well, that could be either taken like, oh, I'd like my family to be like that. And that is what I have experienced on book tours across the nation, doing book signings with Surviving Sissy and My Family Affair of the Life in Hollywood, and people would come up to me. And, you know, I had tearful people. And they said, you know, I had such a difficult childhood, and I was abused, and I would turn on to that television show, and it was the one place that I could escape. There was one place where I could get some solace or comfort. And so maybe it was a fantasy, but it was something to aim for, and really the emotion and the affection, not only between the real actors, but those characters, was quite real.
Yeah, it seemed there was a tangible heart among the cast that, granted, every single one of you was an actor worthy of your chops, but underneath that, the resonance between all of you, between the core cast, was tangible, and I think it transcended acting. You know, it was very real, very tangible.
Yes, I agree with you. And when they tried to remake it, they did not have that transcendence. And then they had actors that were kind of overdoing it, not really even liking each other. And that comes through. It really does, because in my own estimation, and acting is an amalgam of who a person is along with the character. If you try and do an intellectual rendering of a character, it's not even going to, in your wonderful word, resonate. It isn't going to come, it's not going to be real, and your audiences aren't going to feel it. You can, in my estimation, you can't be anybody other than who you are. So if you're playing a queen or a king or a rapist or a, you know, violent person, you have to pick out some aspects of yourself that will make that character true and relatable.
And then just
haven't you thought about killing somebody that, you know, comes right in front of you, especially in Southern California traffic, which is in and out? I'm going to kill that guy. What's wrong with him?
Well, we're on tape, so I'm not going to admit anything.
Those emotions you got to bring to someone who will carry through with it.
That's true. And, you know, it brings an interesting point. Sissy was pretty iconic and very sweet. And, you know, she acted like a typical 15-year-old. But, you know, were you called upon after creating such an iconic role, were you called upon to play against Sissy and play, you know, evil or vile or mean on camera?
Well, you know, Sissy was kind of an amalgam of my personality and that character. And the book, Surviving Sissy, you know, how are you going to overcome this sweet, nice, wholesome person? That's one of the reasons I went to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. And I said, oh, okay, this is the way we do Shakespeare, and this is the way I'm going to play Juliet. You get back to Hub, and there isn't really a lot of call for Shakespeare. And I look back now on my career. I just got a Life Achievement Award, and my wonderful son, who says, you got a Life Achievement Award, Mom? You're not dead yet. I said, thank you, honey. I'm not dead.
That's true.
It's okay. I got a lot of living to do. We'll let you out of the basement sometime. Yes.
yeah, you got what used to be the Rooney Award, right? The Mickey Rooney Award.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh, and that was from the Southern California Motion Picture Council.
Wow.
Right. The Golden Halo. Yes, Mickey was, I loved Mickey. So I look back on what I have done, and I've, like, never done an X-rated movie or, you know, something, nor have I wanted to.
Right.
I've really, in my estimation, done really quality movies and films and stage plays. My voiceover work, I've won, like, 4 Audies for audio books.
Right.
And I've done, like, 5 animated series, and they were all not, you know, that grown-ups could watch, and they're not all, you know, for kids, but more family-oriented and things that were, you know, done with quality, with great scripts. So I'm happy about that. So, I am certainly not as sweet as Sissy, and my family will tell you that. But and even if I never overcame it, I mean, I think it is wrong to disparage what you have created, unless it's really awful and hurtful and it's a porn thing that you were embarrassed about doing,
sure,
you know, when you were in your 20s or something. But
well,
that's what I think, and I'm proud of it.
Good for you. I mean, please understand that in no way am I disparaging Sissy or what you've done ever. It's just, as an actor, one is called upon to play against type on occasion. And I was looking for was if you ever were called upon to play against type. And in the Royal Academy, I'm certain you were, because Shakespeare didn't write a lot of, you know, sweet 15-year-olds.
That's true.
Okay.
Or 20-year-olds or 30-year-olds or 40-year-olds. Cause I've gone through all those decades.
There you go.
When you're on camera, it's difficult because I have this, like, baby face, and it's a sweet-looking face. That's why I love animation, and I love doing audiobooks, because then I can really play against type. Who is a very evil creature in this anime, JoJo's Bizarre Adventures.
Right.
And I played witches and this and that, and that is, I love doing things like that. I wouldn't be believable. I mean, you'd have to put me under so many layers of makeup,
right,
to transform, which, you know, is, and that's kind of fun to do. But so far, I mean, because I have my tentacles out to all the different areas of entertainment, so.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
On stage and in radio and in TV and film and authorship and producing. So that's a really long-winded answer to I've really not played against time. Now I'm playing Sweet Grandmas.
Wow.
For the leading ladies, that was actually during my children's entertainment phase of my life when I had my own child and I was doing a lot of kids stuff. I was creating tapes of Beatrix Potter and Mother Goose, and I was a vice president of edutainment for kids where we created toys and I cast the voices for them and did a lot of voices myself.
Sure.
So during my leading lady period was when I was a mom primarily and doing that type of thing.
And you got the, it sounds, I'm hearing something in your voice, which is always good for a voice actress, that there's really a sense of pride and accomplishment in that period of your life.
Oh, yes. Somebody asked me, what is the best thing that you have ever done in your life? It was an interview I was doing. They said, what role that is it that made you most proud? And I said, well, the role of a true mom, my son, is my proudest accomplishment. I love my son, and I loved being a mom. And I still love being a mom if I could ever get him and his girlfriend out of the basement. That's really setting jest. But, I mean, there's a two-bedroom, two-bath basement, and they have a private entrance.
Believe me, coming from a guy who was 25 and living in his in-law's basement, which is a long story and not interesting to my audience for sure, but there are worse places to be than a two-bedroom, two-bath mother-in-law walkout, believe me. The voiceover transition and the audiobook work that you do, and of course, I have two favorite Kathy Garver voice roles, Firestar, of course, and Miss America that we talked about before we started recording. That's an interesting transition that a lot of folks who are established stage actors get into. How did it happen for you? How did you get behind a microphone?
Well, I had a commercial agent, Don Schwartz, in Los Angeles, and he did all my on-camera. And one time he called me on an interview to go do a voiceover. I said, what's a voiceover? Never heard of this. And he says, oh, they need somebody to do something for Starkist Tuna. I said, okay. So I went, and I'm talking to this producer, and he said, okay, now all you have to say is, I like Starfish Tuna. I said, okay. I said, I like Starfish Tuna. He says, okay, now do it another way. Another way? You want me to do another way? Okay. I like Starfish Tuna. No. Another voice, a different voice. You mean a different voice than my voice? Yes. Oh, well, I had never heard that asked of me before. So did some ridiculously stupid voice like, I love Starfish Tuna. And he said, okay, thank you very much.
Wow.
I said, oh. So I immediately signed up for voiceover lessons and found that I have, I teach voiceover now and in San Francisco, and that so many people have all kinds of voices within them. I mean, you could do five just now, the different voice that you have perhaps talking to an animal or when you're in church or a synagogue or wherever, or at a basketball game. Already you have like four voices or to the one you love. So those are all different kinds of voices that in it. Oh, Coco, come here, Coco. Get him! You know, already. Right. That's part of Firestar. And then, you know, the ways that you can talk really young or talk really old or talk like, you know, change your voice in any other way or talk like this or, you know, so there are a myriad of voices. But that, again, is a long-winded answer to how I first started getting into voiceover.
The long-winded answers are exactly why I called you. The show's not about me. It's about you, Cavi. And the more you talk, the better it is. So we're in great shape. On one hand, I want to talk about Firestar and I want to talk about that experience. And on the other, you know, it's a very respectable line item in a very comprehensive resume. Maybe it's more interesting to talk about what kind of voice work and things you're doing now and about the classes that you teach.
Well, I got my audiobook out for Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood, and my new book, Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now, comes out April 15th, and I'm going to do an audiobook. I have my own studio at my house. It was in the basement. For some reason, it got transferred up to the garage.
I wonder why.
I don't know how that happened. But now my studio is in the garage. I teach at VoiceOne Studios in San Francisco. I teach speech and diction, since I have a degree in speech, and I went back to UCLA to get a master's degree in theater arts as well. So I teach how to develop characters, how to make voices for toys, since I was the vice president of the toy company, and we did that.
Wow.
I teach how to narrate audiobooks, and I also teach ADR, audio digital replacement, for post-production. So I teach those things, which keeps me busy, as well as I'm producing two new film projects. And Diane Nine, who is with Nine Speakers, has set me up on speaking engagements, which goes right along since I majored in speech. And I made two speeches last week, one to the Motion Picture Mothers. That's at the Sportsman's Lodge. You know where that is in Southern California, where they give out the awards, too. And so Jerry Mather's mom and Tom Selleck's mom. So I talked about the power of perseverance and how it's important to keep going towards your goal, no matter what obstacles may be in your way.
That's a lot of stuff. You're a busy lady, Cavi. You're a very busy lady.
I am.
Two questions. One, you teach in San Francisco. Do you teach remotely? Are you teaching Skype classes or anything like that? Can someone take a class remotely, or do they have to be in San Francisco to learn at your feet?
So far, they have to be in San Francisco because I haven't had the time to set that up. And I do a wonderful, physical exercise warm-up, and they said, do an app. So when I have time to get around to doing that app, because I'm also hosting a Family Tree Recipe program, and each show, a recipe is brought to the show that's been handed down, and then it's paired with a wine, and then I'm hosting another show for I have a star on the Walk of Stars in Palm Springs. Love Palm Springs. And so I'm going to host doing a profile of each one of the people who have a star on the Walk of Fame. But so far, you have to come to San Francisco to do the class.
All right. We'll be looking into that. It's a heck of a commute from here, Cavi, but it's a very tempting thing.
Yes. I want to do, have you seen on, Facebook, James Patterson has those online master classes, how to write, et cetera.
Yes.
And Richard Dreyfuss has one, the master class on acting.
Right.
And I would like to do that on voiceover. And perhaps I'll do it towards the end of the year. I just haven't gotten around to doing that yet.
Understood. Sign me up when it's ready. The new book, the Ex-Child Stars book, obviously was a lot of work and something you're intimately familiar with. Tell me a little bit about what we can expect from that book on April 15th.
I had a co-author on that book, Fred Asher, and the way that it's organized is that we take the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s television shows, and Fred does the description of the shows, and then I do all the bios of the child actors that were in those shows.
Right.
What happened to them, and, you know, like I had mentioned, Jerry Mathers and Tony Dow and Frank Bank and in Leave It to Beaver, but we, you know, start out with I Love Lucy and Keith Thibodeau, who played Little Ricky.
Right.
So it's a compendium primarily of all of those child actors, and then a summation at the end of what's happening to the child actors today and what can be done to help them so they unfortunately don't do what my sweet co-star and Family Affair did, Anissa Jones, who died at 18 yeah. from a drug overdose, and Johnny Whitaker on drugs and alcohol. So why does that happen, and how can that be counteracted?
That's really interesting. Is that, I mean, on one hand, you think, well, it's the common perception is that child stars are their adulthood is always a little more difficult than the rest of us. But I think on one hand, the media gives that attention, and on the other, is it really that more difficult than the rest of us just by virtue of experience? Am I making sense, Kathy?
Yes, and actually, I think that you said the one word which I think is most descriptive, which is difficult. It isn't that it's they all have awful lives or they all have fabulous lives. I do think there is more of a difficulty, and I wish I talked to you before. I would have included that because they are exposed at such an early age to such intense competition, and with the spotlight being on them. And when that spotlight fades and they have to go on their own, it is difficult because they say, well, you know, where are my people to, you know, do my hair and do my makeup? And you mean I have to pay this bill myself? And what's a bill? And, oh, what's money? You know, so they, in many ways, don't develop those life skills that are so important to enable one. And it's not that they don't become successful adults. It's just that it's more difficult in their lives to maybe fit in or to find their path or to be as strong as one would hope an adult is.
Wow. And it's interesting because you're required to be, and I'm speaking only through what I've read and the other child ex-child stars that I've interviewed in the past, you're expected to be an adult. You're expected to be, you know, a professional, on time, hit your mark, know your lines, and function like an adult and actually have a job when most kids are just, you know, playing with Hot Wheels cars or whatever it might be at that time. And, I mean, does that provide, and I guess we're speaking in broad terms, does that provide a maturity and an adulthood that might prevent the ability to interact with non-industry kids?
Yes. I think it puts one in a different position. And there is a certain maturity, and there's a certain immaturity. So that combination, the immaturity of not being able to experience the same things growing up and trying to find their identity, you know, one's identity.
Right.
And that's what I think is very hard, especially for a tweener, and that was hard for Anissa Jones, who played Buffy.
Right.
Because here she was, she started at 8 years old in the show, lasted 5 years, and here was 13, almost 14, and she's still carrying around a doll and with a little short skirt and ponytails. And this isn't who she was. She wanted to be like the friends then that she would go back to school with
right.
and try and fit in. So her friends were taking drugs. She said, oh, well, this is a way to fit in. I'll take drugs so I can be like them.
Yeah.
I don't think it was out of a sense of depression. I think it was out of a need to fit in to the particular crowd. Now, Disney, if they have a kid and a child, a tweener that is a star in one of their series, they, first of all, do 3 years in one. So it's the same age that the series is supposed to have that child be, but they also have them go to a psychologist once a week and say, what are your stresses? What are you feeling now? You know, are you angry about something? Because the social media is so rampant and they're so critical that, you know, God forbid you get a blemish on your cheek. Oh, my gosh, did you see her face? She just looks awful. Oh, did you see the color of sweater she wore?
Yeah.
Wasn't that just her? horrendous, you know, and for a tweener who's just trying to get their identity and not feeling the self-esteem or the love, you know, that can, you know, really hurts and helps to destroy that personality.
There's a story that I've heard. The foreword to Surviving Sissy is written by Patty Duke, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a story that she tells about, you know, when she was filming the Patty Duke show, they would bring in teenagers from Burbank High or wherever to teach her how to dance and act like a teenager, because she had no idea. And, you know, so here she is, 16, 17 years old, feeling kind of like a stranger in a strange land. And that seems to be the personification of the story that we're kind of getting to.
Yes. I think so. I mean, I did 3 or 4 of the Patty Duke shows with Patty,
right?
And she's a friend of mine, and even when, I mean, I remember on Family Affair, and the extras were all dressed up in a certain way, but I was pretty aware of what was going on culturally, and I told the producer, I said, well, this isn't what the kids would wear, you know, they would wear the short skirts and things like that. But Federson, as we had started this conversation to make this a 50th anniversary and to make it endure,
right,
didn't want it like that. So it was a fantasy. So even when one tried to be, you know, part of the crowd, that was nixed.
Wow. In the book about ex-kid stars, they're the stories that we've talked about, Anissa, with all due respect, and, you know, your Dana Plato's and things like that. But there's the other side of the coin. There's your Kathy Garvers. Can you talk a little bit about some of the kid stars who have grown up and really, really thrived?
Absolutely, and there are wonderful stories of Ron Howard and Candace Cameron.
Right.
And some who have even fallen off and then come back and realize, I mean, because teenagers are going to rebel and, you know, people will try this and that and the other thing, and then they kind of see the light and said, whoa, this isn't the path I really want to go on,
right,
and are able to come back and be on the path. And there are some lovely stories about child actors who have, and some that have not stayed in the business. They say, hey, you know what, this isn't for me. And it's just sprinkled with the people who became lawyers, lots of lawyers, child stars became. Or even in What's the New Show? Well, because it is a big act, isn't it?
Right, right.
And I say that with all due respect to lawyers. I was accepted at UCLA, my alma mater, to go to their law school. And I said, no, this isn't for me. But in that present, what's that, The Grinder?
Yeah.
This is a new show. Yes, and you have the lawyer and the actor, and so anyway, and I think that, I don't know if Fred Savage, but there was one of the other ones that became a lawyer that was in that kind of ilk and genre, but anyway, yes, there are some nice stories in that as well.
Great, and you know, Hollywood loves a happy ending, but it's, you know, you cut a wide swatch and you read a lot. There's a great book out now, if we might diverge a little bit. There's a great book right now by a doctor of communication at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, about the Little Rascals and about the culture that surrounded the four black characters and how they grew into adulthood. I'll send Diane the information about the book, because it might be of interest to you as you and an interesting companion to the ex child stars book, because they faced a lot of the same things that it seems like you're talking about, and some survived and thrived and some did not.
Yes, and I've heard about that book, and I would like to read it. I'd like to see it.
Well,
and people are always interested in if when you see somebody on TV or a movie, it's like, well, they're your friends now, and you follow, you know, their lives.
Right.
And it's just like the people that you go to school with, and then you have the reunion. Oh, what are you doing now? What happened? And so I think it's just such a natural human type of thing to wonder, and then to wonder why did one thrive and one did not.
Did you discover any common denominators among those who thrived or those who did not?
Well, yes. The ones that had family support were the ones that thrived, and the ones whose family did not use them as their personal bank and take their money to support the rest of the family or to spend it themselves on being a manager, you know, and pay the mortgage on the house.
Right.
An 8-year-old should not be paying the mortgage on their parents' home.
Right.
And they should be saving the money. That's why Paul Peterson's organization, A Minor Consideration, has done so much for, in legally, there has to be a percentage of the child star's income that is put away from them, because so many of, especially the early child stars, they get to 18 and they either have nothing or they have just a small percentage. That happened to Johnny Whitaker, who had 7 brothers and sisters.
Wow.
And his mom didn't work. You know, she was taking care of him. So that creates bitterness. And so it's the family, it's the finance, it's the education. Those who went to school, those who went to college, became much more successful than those who did not.
Wow.
And, of course, those who took drugs, you know, or got onto that path are the ones that had not such happy lives.
That's interesting. That's going to be a fascinating book. So what is the official title of the book, Kathy?
It's X Child Stars with a big X. Child Stars, Where Are They Now? And that debuts April 15th. And then my other book is Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood. They're both available. Well, you can take actually pre-orders now on X Child Stars. That's at Amazon.com. And my website, which is KathyGarver.com, strangely enough.
How about that? And be looking for Kathy on any number of projects. I'm surprised she's not selling Tupperware, too. I mean, you have a few extra minutes in your day. You could do one more thing, Kathy. Come on.
Well, actually, that reminds me. You have a line out of Sissy Silk soy candles, French vanilla, and Sissy Silk room fragrance and Sissy Silk lotion. I have a stepson who makes all of these by hand, and they are going to be in the gifting suite for the Oscars. And I'm going to be in the suite. And so, yes, I have that. Funny you should mention that. I forgot all about those products.
There you go. So where can we get Sissy Silk? Can we buy it online?
Yes, you can on my website at KathyGarver.com and also at CBTCandles.com.
Fantastic. Kathy, it's been a pleasure. You and I have shaken hands a couple of times at some like comics conventions or at the Hollywood Collector shows that happen periodically here in Southern California. You've always been very sweet, and it's nice to see people lined up 3 or 4 people deep hovering around your table to get a picture of you and Mrs. Beasley together. It's really cool.
Thank you. Are you going to WonderCon? I'll be at WonderCon in next month.
Absolutely. I will see you there. Now, you said you're going to be in the gift suite for the Oscars. Does that mean you're going to be in Hollywood this weekend?
Yes.
Oh, all right. Well, I would offer to buy you a cup of coffee, but I know you don't have a couple of minutes in your day.
Well, I appreciate the offer.
It is.
Thank you, Tim.
It is my pleasure. And, you know, this has really been a treat for me. Thank you very, very much. I wish you a lot of success with the books. And is there anything else you'd like to let the world know, as much as my audience is the world? Is there anything you'd like them to know about what else they can expect from Kathy Garver?
Just keep expecting me to say, keep on going towards your goal. Just keep on keeping on.